Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 3rd of January, and I'm recording at 9:35 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just have a quick look at what's happening here in the first two trading days of the year. Now, not all stock markets are open, and therefore not all the data is in China, for instance, closed in here today, but we have seen a different opening to the year than we had seen on the previous 4 years. And in the previous 4 years, I think we started fairly explosively. Perhaps that will return next week, but I certainly wouldn't bet on it. And I think there's a very good reason as to why we've had a more subdued start this year. And that's because of the extremely good gains that we saw, at least in the inform markets. And not all markets have been inform. But those that are the prime beneficiaries of the lower interest rates, and particularly the excessively accommodative monetary policy coming from central banks, such as the quantitative easing program QE in the United States, all the money in Europe that the ECB has poured into the banking sectors, Japan's version of quantitative easing that we're seeing there. These have to a certain extent, well, they obviously have a very regional effect. They also spill over across borders and can have a significant or a not insignificant global effect as well. But the markets that are not running these programs, or at least not running them quite so aggressively, or the economies that are not running these programs quite so aggressively, are seeing their markets fall back a little bit more easily. What we have is a situation where revenue has grown rather slowly. That's in line with global GDP growth. So corporate profits have tended to be pumped up by, cutting costs and also some innovation through technologies. But increasingly, there have been share buybacks. I mean, some of those make financial sense, as well as they're not just rewarding the boards of those companies, but they are flattering earnings. Let's put it that way, because the revenue is soft overall. Now, that's not a big problem in my opinion. If stock markets, if global GDP growth was roaring away, we know that interest rates would be shooting higher, and that inflation pressures would be building. There would be all sorts of shortages developing in the system, and central banks would be planning their next tightening moves, which are recipes for bear markets. So we don't have an environment anything like that. We have in the fifth, having completed or in the process of completing, depending on which countries you're looking at, the fifth year since the big credit crisis, global slump, crash even in 2008. And as we know, it takes, from Rogoff and Reinhardt and others, it takes at least 5 to 7 years before GDP growth gets back to anything resembling normal in terms of what we've seen in other decades. And it can easily take longer. I think it will take longer for Europe before we see strong GDP growth, but that's not necessarily a bad environment here in terms of stock markets, where stock markets are still undervalued and also beginning to push higher. Okay, so what about the omens in terms of the first 2 days of trading this year? Well, there'll be a lot of talk about what happens during the first week, and is the first week strong, and do most markets gain during the first week, in other words. And they will cite statistics to say that historically that's been as much as an 80% indicator that the market will end up higher at the end of the year. And then other people will want to see, well, what happens over the first fortnight. And if most stock markets are higher at the end of that fortnight, then they will be quite positive about their outlook for the year. Others will take 3 weeks, and some will take the whole month. So you'll get the gamut. But the January effect will certainly have a psychological effect on what happens in markets. And my own view here is, January effect aside, that probably the healthiest thing that we could see would be a mean reversion reaction here by the stock markets that have done best. And that would be Wall Street and a number of others that you could, well, Japan has done extremely well, but Japan had quite a significant consolidation. I think Wall Street's the really important one, because that is the most extended, as you know from a quick look at any of the price charts, and particularly for the NASDAQ index, which has accelerated most of all. Okay, so my own view, as I've expressed before, is that this year is we'll certainly see lesser returns for the high-flying markets, such as Wall Street. But given the big monetary tailwind that is still there and will remain there, that we have a reasonable chance of seeing an up year. But expect a more choppy environment. And I would look for some of the undervalued markets and some of the undervalued shares overall within the markets that are within the global economy. Okay, now I think also in terms of what happens this year and beyond, there will be a number of key variables that we want to actually keep an eye on. For instance, what happens to energy prices? We have some people who think they're going to move sharply higher. We have other people who think they're going to move lower. Some people who think they're just going to range, which is exactly what they have been doing. My only concern is that I do not want to see a big spike in energy prices. In other words, going back to the 2007 and 2000, early 2008 highs, when I think WTI and Brent crude got up over to up over $140. We certainly do not want to see another spike upwards of that magnitude. I'd feel more relaxed about it if more countries were fracking, but they are not. But nevertheless, one of the big themes here at FT Money has been that the longer we go without an energy spike, the less likely we are to see one, because we are getting the various renewables are coming on stream. We are certainly getting some fracking. We're getting some new nuclear developments that are taking place, and that this is all helping to reduce the risk of other energy spikes. But this is the big one in terms of key variables. Best put it this way, A spike in crude oil prices would be a game changer. It would hit global GDP growth quite hard. It would push most stock markets into a bear phase, as we last saw in 2008. There are other problems, even more significant problems in 2008. I don't expect those to be repeated, but energy prices certainly were a big factor there. Next one, bond yields. What happens to bond yields? I think we all know that over the medium and probably longer term, that bond yields are far more likely to move somewhat higher rather than lower. And the key one that I would keep an eye on is Wall Street, where that 10-year government bond, Treasury bond, is right around its September highs, the 3% level, where it is ranging, and I think it will push higher over the medium term, as I've already said. I think the Fed will be doing its utmost to prevent it from moving upwards too quickly, but the key factors that will be influencing that will be inflation. The outlook on that is still reasonably favorable. How strong is or weak is global GDP growth? The stronger global GDP growth is, the more likely those bond yields are to pick up. Or could we just have an environment where we had a self-feeding move because more of the people who have been overweight in bond funds for a number of years, do they so decide that they want out and that they would rather play in the equity market or property or whatever else? But weigh it all up, we are going to get a normalization in bond yields over the next few years, and that means that they are going to go somewhat higher. Key point to remember for this year: if they move up quite sharply, quite quickly, then that will obviously become a headwind for stock markets. If they move up very gradually, it can actually be a tailwind for stock markets, as more people drift out of the bond markets and push some of that money into equities. Now, global GDP growth, I've already discussed that somewhat, but that's obviously a key variable. If it surprises to the upside, it would reach a point where it might not be as good for stock markets as people would initially think. Yes, if global GDP growth is clearly stronger, then in all probability, that revenue earnings for major corporations would improve more than we saw this year. But if global GDP growth does pick up more quickly, we will see some tightening of interest rates, at least in some countries, and bond yields will certainly push higher. On the other hand, if global GDP growth moves up very gradually, and I feel that that's more likely to be the case than not. I think it is improving, but it's unlikely to surge in line with that. It takes at least 5 to 7 years following a credit crisis before you get back to anything remotely close to what people would consider normal GDP growth rates. So actually, the rather slow, faltering recovery is quite beneficial for stock markets, not all equities, but certainly the more successful companies, some of the bigger autonomies, are more likely than not to do quite well in that gradual economic recovery environment. Then there's the issue of inflation. That's an important one. The big concern, really, among central banks, I think over the last few years, is were we going to see deflationary problems such as Japan experienced for such a long period of time. And inflation rates, at least those reported by governments, have not picked up very much in most countries, as you know. But if we were to get global GDP growth surprising on the upside, that would start to increase inflationary pressures, and that would also push those bond yields higher, and that would become a bit of a headwind for stock markets overall. Then there are what are hopefully in the unlikely category, some of the wild cards, outliers, if you will. I'm referring to regional tensions. We have the China-Japan posturing, and a little bit more than just posturing. That's a high-risk strategy, and I don't think either country has any long-term interest in any kind of engagement beyond that, and so hopefully nothing will pick up there, but nonetheless, that's one of the areas that needs to be watched. The Middle East is perennially one of the regions that needs to be watched. We've had so many disruptions there in the last few years, tragically, for the countries involved. If the situation really got out of control, it would reduce the amount of energy coming out of the region, and that is certainly something that we do not want to see, as that could push crude oil prices higher. I'm reasonably relaxed in terms of the global tensions here overall. We've always got some global tensions, but we don't have what I think are clear game changers, not yet at any rate, and hopefully we don't. And then there are, I'll classify these as exogenous risks. This is sort of paranoid's corner items, but these are things that I think are less likely, but would obviously affect markets. Bombings, well, we get bombings taking place every day, but they're usually fairly small affairs. We don't want anybody running around with a dirty nuke, and I don't think we will see that, but that's not impossible, and it would be a serious risk if that were to happen. And also planetary impact. We don't want any big asteroids flowing in to our zone. It's very much of a long shot, but those are potential game changers, but rare possibilities. One that is a potential game changer much closer to home, and something that people actually control, is governance. Do we get good governance, or do we get bad governance? Ellen and I always stress the governance issue here, with the phrase that well-worn phrase, well-used, frequently used in this service, is governance is everything. And if we have, but not least for the emerging market and frontier market areas. And in governments don't view it just on an absolute basis, but look at the trend. In other words, is the trend for governance in a country improving somewhat, or is it deteriorating somewhat? If it is improving somewhat, and people can objectively see that, and the consensus view is that governance is improving in that country, that will certainly be a tailwind for the stock market. On the other hand, as you would expect, if governance is perceived to be deteriorating in a country or region, then that's very much of a headwind for global stock markets. So keep an eye on all those factors, and excuse me, and hopefully we won't get anything too alarming happening in any area. My own view is that's exactly what will happen. We'll get modest growth. We'll get modest increase in the U.S. Treasury yields and yields for a number of other countries, but nothing that's so strong that it causes serious concerns for major economies. And we will get modest gains over the years. But where that doesn't apply, governance is a key variable, as you've already seen in 2013. Just going to have a quick little drink of water with a scratchy throat. Okay, looking further out. I've often made the case that we are going to see the next secular bull market beginning before the end of this decade. And the patterns that we're seeing are reminiscent to what's taken place previously. And the so I'm going to take the headset off again, just have a little cough, scratchy throat. Sorry about that, but this is all live stuff here. Okay, I was going to say that what we have seen was the from really 1999, 2000, the end of the last secular bull market for global equities, and that had. I saw that at the beginning of my career, although I didn't know what it was at the time. But in the middle to late 1960s, we'd had that wonderful secular bull market up to that point, and then it all started to go wrong, and we had a lot of ranging activities, a lot of excessive overheating, and so on. Where you had a lot of run back to the late 1990s, we certainly had a lot of excessive overheating, as you know, and the systems get a little bit out of control. And then you get this long moderation, you get this valuation contraction, and you get a couple of steep bear markets, and then governance tends to improve, not least among corporations, and then they begin to pick up, and you have a little bit of a better environment. And you have the potential for another secular bull market. The factors that I think are crucial for that next secular bull market, luckily the most important one, or certainly equal importance, is what I refer to as the accelerated rate of technological innovation. And incidentally, I appreciate emails that are coming in on this subject and some articles of general interest. It's a very exciting field, and we all benefit from it, but arguably the more successful corporations benefit most of all. I'm not talking about just those that produce the technology. Really, it's the users of the technology that most effectively who are the primary beneficiaries of this accelerated rate of technological innovation. And it's going to continue, and that is for certain. If you didn't see the wonderful item that is posted in my section of the website yesterday, came in with an email, an attachment, a great report coming from the Australian newspaper in Australia. The head writer on technology there, well worth reading. Okay, a crucial one. Energy prices, what are they going to be? Well, I feel with all of the technological innovation, which is improving renewables, which is enabling us to extract more fossil fuels, particularly the clean fossil fuel, being shale gas, and of course we get gas from other sources as natural gas from other sources as well. And my long-term prediction in the last few years is that towards the end of this decade we should see lower energy prices in real, in other words, inflation-adjusted terms, and that would be another big plank for the super cycle or secular bull market that this service has talked about. Another one is the conversion of more governments to conversion, I believe I said, to capitalism, and because it works better than anything else, despite all its flaws and inequities. And that certainly wasn't the case back, for instance, back in 1982, when the last secular bull market was beginning to emerge. And but today it's very different. And whether it's command capitalism or democratic capitalism, it, as I've already said, it works better than other systems. And that's now really the dominant economic policy across the globe, and you can count the countries that don't go for this pretty much on the fingers of one hand. And the other factor, which I think is hugely important, is the global rise of the global middle class. Across the world, there's just a much bigger market for these big autonomy type companies that that we favor so much over the longer term. And I think these factors really should help to create the environment for another secular bull market. And secular bull markets are interrupted by cyclical bear markets, so it's not at all, and it's not just a one-way street, as you. As you know, you think during the last secular bull market, you think of 1987. At the time, a lot of people thought it was the end of the world. But it's never the end of the world. And incidentally, I think that I noticed that some forecasters, I don't think many, many subscribers, but that you'll notice with some forecasters that there can be, they can be, I would describe them as secular bears. They're almost always bearish, or almost always worried about what's going to happen. That's a bad state of mind overall. I don't think people who have that mindset, mind frame, I don't think they live as long as other people. But also, it runs counter to the whole history of what's happened throughout the what's happened with the human race. We go through horrendous incidents. But overall, progress, not least technological innovation, which has always been with us, it's just that it's speeding up so much in this era, which makes it such a fascinating process to watch, and it's really like science fiction becoming real before our very eyes. But my point is really that on a long term, all the bumps between all the bumps that occur along the way, that things are improving. And what's the evidence of that? Well, people live longer. There's more wealth generation. There is a bigger middle class overall. And we have more control over diseases. Again, back to technological innovation. In terms of at least scientific achievements and medical science. And I think that's the environment that we have always been in. And so I don't think we're going back to the Stone Age anytime soon, provided that great big asteroid isn't hasn't got our number. And on that note, folks, I've held you long enough. I'll say Happy New Year for the last time to anyone who has just returned and is listening to this audio. Thanks for all the feedback that you've given us on the website and the chart library. It's really appreciated, and we're working. I can genuinely say we're working around the clock because we have people in other parts of the world who are helping us with this challenge. And there we are. All the very best to all of you. Have a fabulous weekend.